The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
It is The Dory Monson Show. I am Jason Rantz filling in. We still got a lot to get to, including what I promised you we'd get to first.
The Big Lead. Big local.
Anything having to do with Pam Roach, a local lawmaker. This time she is in the position of Pierce County Councilman. Anytime Pam Roach's name is even hinted at, I get super excited. Because you know you're in for a treat. You know that she's cursing someone out, sending a really snarky letter to someone. There's just always some bit of snark to her, and that's why I love her. Pam Roach and I contend, would be great brunch buddies. Because I'd be there just trying to talk and get, like, I want to talk about boys and stuff. And she's all like, no, we need to teach handwriting to youth because the kids are forgetting how to write letters.
I think you guys would be talking over each other the whole time.
Yes.
No one would be listening.
Oh, but see, that's the fun part. I would be listening because I know talking over her would get her really upset. So she was at, on October 5th, a budget retreat, which sounds like the most boring place to be, right? A retreat to talk about budgets. But then you throw Pam Roach in there and you know something's going to go down. And they started to get into a debate, the folks over there, according to this audio of the meeting that was obtained by the News Tribune. They were talking about a planned crisis stabilization center that's set for construction next year. And it's a 16-bed facility, they say. It says it's championed by County Executive Bruce Danmeyer, who Pam Roach, I think, loathes more than anybody in the world, because we've talked about this before. And they got into it, and her son is also involved. That's the fun part about this. You think that Pam Roach maybe gets along better with her son, who was serving as this chairman, a part of this retreat conversation? No. Because at some point she turns to him and she just says the F-bomb.
Stop. Both of you are done. Stop.
Stop.
We're not even going to talk about this. Just stop.
I'm leaving.
Look. Really?
Well, Dan, what's the deal here? He's just representing.
No, we're not having the conversation. We're talking about a budget.
This is, I love her so much. Tell me she wouldn't make every single meeting more exciting. Tell me a meeting that she wouldn't be exciting in. I'm serious. Just name something. Name something that she would, oh man, Pam Roach is going to be such a downer. This meeting's going to not be, it's going to be so boring because of her. She livens it up. I love her. President Pam Roach.
But you love dissension. You love, like,
just
yelling.
Stop.
She's leaving. And she left.
So I know that a few years ago she was asked to go through anger management.
Ah, she doesn't
counseling.
Need it. Nope, doesn't. She should lean in. This is a brand. This is a brand. Why not just lean into this at some point? Because, and by the way, she keeps getting elected to office, so people love her. She gets stuff done.
Did you see her statement on this?
No, I don't even want to read her statement.
This is great.
I hope. Okay, read it.
10 seconds. All right. I love my son dearly, but sometimes we have political disagreements. Nonetheless, that's no excuse for harsh language. It seems I've been listening to too many Democratic protesters lately.
Just stop.
Do Democratic lawmakers cuss a lot? I know. I mean, I know she's throwing shade, but what's that based on?
Protesters, she said.
Oh, protesters.
Yes.
I guess they do cuss a lot. She must hang out with them and she gets inspired. I don't think she needs to do that. I think she just own it. Yeah, this is how adults talk. I'm sorry, have you walked into our newsroom at any given point? Ursula's just screaming out the F word all the time.
You are so full of it.
Just going nuts.
Oh,
and everyone's all like, geez. We call her the Pam Roach of the newsroom. You got to chill out a little bit, Ursula, with all the cussing.
You're never even in the newsroom, so you're
all
so full
of it. I am there all the time.
No, yeah.
And this all I hear.
I think if anyone were to put bets on between us two, who would be more likely to have a tantrum in the newsroom? Yeah, thanks.
Okay,
Andrew's
first of all,
chuckling.
I would passive-aggressively tweet that. I would not have any sort of issue in the newsroom. I mean, I'll have an issue, just not in front of you.
Just stop.
I'm leaving.
The Big Lead, top national.
Justice Brett Kavanaugh will undoubtedly be a campaign point for both sides in the few weeks left leading up to the midterm elections. But now will Nikki Haley's departure from the UN become a campaign issue? And with someone so universally loved leaving the Trump administration, what exactly is the impact? Joining me this morning is Sam Nunberg. He's a former senior political advisor to President Donald J. Trump's campaign, plus a UN delegate for the European Center for Law and Justice. Sam, good morning.
Hey, great to be back on, Jason. Thank you for having me.
So how shocked were you at this announcement yesterday? Because it took virtually everybody off guard.
It was certainly quite a surprise. It was a surprise that it was announced less than even 12 hours after the president had the Kavanaugh swearing-in ceremony in the White House. It was a surprise the way that the ambassador, Nikki Haley, the way that she announced it on her own terms. I believe it did catch the White House off guard. But with that said, I thought that the president and the ambassador handled it quite well after the fact. And I actually, at first, I was quite critical of Nikki Haley for making this announcement exactly 4 weeks before the midterms. But in hindsight, perhaps she just wanted to get it done before the midterms in case the Republicans lose one of the legislative bodies, and she didn't want to look like she was abandoning the president.
Well, what do you make? I mean, you obviously, you're wondering whether or not it was the right move to make that announcement prior to the midterm elections. What do you think is behind that? I mean, what do you think is truly behind that? Everyone is saying there's got to be something more.
I think that first of all, certainly the White House was caught off guard. But what I think is once she had made the decision with the way that other departures have gone at the White House, she wanted to make sure that this happened on her own terms. As you know, and I can tell you from personal experience, being a strong supporter of the president doesn't mean I won't critique Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump does not handle departures well, especially if people are leaving on their own volition. So I think from that point of view, she was actually smart to do it that way, get it done with, get it out. And I think that, look, we'll be talking about it, and yes, a couple days later, but this is going to be a non-issue, frankly, heading into the last 3 weeks of the midterms, which are critical. The midterms are Donald Trump's first reelect. If he loses the House, I can assure you that the Democrats will pass articles of impeachment and mm-hmm. send it to the Senate. The Democrats are angry. They cannot govern. All they know is they hate Donald Trump, and all they believe is that the Russians threw Donald Trump the election. They're actually crazier than birthers on the Republican side. They are absolutely deranged. I have plenty of friends in New York City. I'm speaking to from New York. They look me straight in the eye and say the only reason Donald Trump won was because of the Russians. They can't get their head around it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is all they are going to do. Is harass him while you'll have a smorgasbord of freak nominees, senator after senator on debate stage, maybe Michael Avenatti, a couple governors you've never heard of, holding debates. And each one will be saying who they hate more. I mean, look at what you saw, the way the Democrats conducted themselves. You saw what they will do with Justice Kavanaugh. That was a dress rehearsal. And that was practice, because they will do anything and everything to this president, to his family, to his business. They will harass him. They will try to delegitimize him, delegitimize mm-hmm. the election results.
Well, and I think you're right. I would say for me, when I'm looking at the landscape going into the midterm elections, it seemed clear that Democrats were already going to win the House. I didn't think that it would be a blue wave, but you know, generally speaking, when you look at the history of things, you know, when Republicans or Democrats are in total control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, there tends to be a shift in power, because generally the American people want that kind of check on the power. So I kind of always assumed that when you look at the particular House races, they were going to certainly lean in the direction of going to the Democrats. The question for me now is the anger coming from the Republicans over the treatment of Brett Kavanaugh, is it enough to get them to go out and vote? And the polling seems to suggest that the enthusiasm gap that the Democrats had that lead on completely evaporated.
Yes, it did. And I would respectfully agree to disagree with you about the House. I mean, I'm even talking to you. You're based in the state of Washington. I think there are some very important seats there that can help control, keep control for the Republicans. The Republicans are going to have a very hard problem in House races in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Virginia. Actually, California won't be as bad as people think. But while it is attrition, a red wave for the Republicans is having a one-seat majority. Either way, you're looking at a slim majority for either party, Jason, after this midterm, which I think is going to anger the American people even more if the Democrats have the House. Once again, they cannot control themselves. They will do articles of impeachment to the Senate. It doesn't matter if there are more senators than there were during the last legislative session, Republican senators. And I think that the American people are going to understand that. Remember, we have to hold, I say we as Republicans, I work for Steve Bannon as a senior advisor for his C4, Citizens of the American Republic. We have to hold enough seats. We only have to lose 22 seats. We keep the majority. And I think that that's, frankly, a 50-50 proposition. It was a 50-50 proposition before Kavanaugh. And we'll see what happens. I mean, anything can happen these last couple weeks.
Yeah, one of those House races that you're referencing here in Washington is the 8th Congressional District. It is Dave Reichert, who's retiring. He is a very popular Republican in what is a purple district. And you've got Dino Rossi, who is trying to keep control of that seat in the hands of the Republicans, going up against a very, very far to the left Democrat in Kim Schreier. And so I hope you're right, because Kim Schreier is going to be one of those people who will just not be able to help herself in going after Republicans and the presidents. Even if it's the wrong move, even if it's going to hurt the country, they're going to lean down that direction because of their just unhinged hatred.
The Democrats are running against Donald Trump, and they're running to protect sanctuary cities. They're running to eliminate ICE. I've never heard of something so sick. Why don't we if you want to eliminate ICE, the next logical step would be to not have a national defense and not have an army, which many of them would be happy about, because they could just use that defense money to weigh on social programs. But what I would say is, this party is the party of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They are socialists. They are not your old Democrat party. They are not the party of even a Barack Obama, who didn't raise taxes his first term. They are not the party of who wants to fight terrorism. They are a party that just wants more spending, more taxes, more regulations. And say what you want about Donald Trump, whether you like him personally, whether you like his tweeting, it is what it is. I happen to like the tweeting. I helped start it for him, excuse me. I would be considered an enabler, but that's a side issue. But Donald Trump inherited a terrible situation, and the world is better off today than it was from the day that he swore into the office. That's just a fact.
Yeah.
That's just a fact. And including with North Korea, and you're on that West Coast, that was a very hot situation. It's cooling down, and he has done his job. He's keeping his promises. He would have kept all of them if the Republicans could have got their act together on Obamacare. But with that said, to any Republican or any Trump voter, I just want to speak to you. I understand if you don't like either party. I understand if you don't think that it's irrelevant to you about these congressional races. Once again, this is Donald Trump's first reelect. The president has said it's a vote for him, and it's a vote to preserve his presidency. It's a vote to preserve this great American experiment where we can take back this country and realign the economics, realign our national security priorities, and help make sure that the forgotten man and woman is remembered here, because we were on a sharp decline pushed by George W. Bush and Barack Obama. And there is a reason why neither one of them like Donald Trump. You know, he is an independent president, very conservative in a lot of ways, but he's independent. And he is trying to do what he is trying to do, and he has been under terrible a cloud, which would only get worse. Do you think what the Justice Department is doing with Robert Mueller, it will only get worse? I know these liberals. I know Jerry Nadler very well, who would chair the House Judiciary Committee, Jason.
Yeah.
They will try to destroy this man.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And the question remains whether or not the voters out there are as concerned with all of this as a lot of Republicans are, and we'll certainly find out in under a month. I've been talking with Sam Nunberg. He's former senior political advisor to the Donald Trump campaign. He's also a UN delegate for the European Center for Law and Justice. Sam, as always, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure and an honor.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
That was The Big Lead. I am Jason Rance, filling in for Dori Monson. If you like what you hear, tune into my show weekday morning, 6 to 9 on AM 770 KTTH. If you got an HD radio, we're 97.3 FM HD Channel 3. If at any point we're here for another 45 minutes, you want to text me, understand that I respond in a snarky way. I respond to snark with even more snark. 98973 is the Online Trading Academy text line. We come back. There's a council member in Gig Harbor who's pushing for a ban on plastic bags, plastic utensils, and plastic straws. I'm not exactly a fan of that. We'll get into it when we come back right here on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Back to the Dori Monson Show. Awesome audio in the form of an amazing interview is brought to you by Brown Bear Car Wash.
This is Dori Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Welcome back to the Dori Monson Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. I am Jason Rance filling in. The city of Gig Harbor is considering a pair of ordinances that go after plastic bags and plastic straws, following in the footsteps of the cities of Seattle and Tacoma. One of the leading proponents is Councilmember Jenny Wook, and she joins me now. Councilmember, good afternoon. Thank you so much for coming on.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
So one of the issues here is plastic bags. So let's just start with that just to separate the two out. How would the plastic bag ban work?
So first of all, we're not proposing any bans on anything. We are mindful of all the plastic pollution that there is. So this particular bag reduction ordinance is to reduce some plastic, large plastic, thin-to-handle plastic shopping carry-out bags. So the plastic bags that are handed out in grocery stores would be restricted. The plastic bags that you get with prepared food would still be available and still be handed out if restaurants and other places with prepared foods would like to use them. So
what does restricted mean?
So we're not eliminating all plastic bags.
Oh, no. Sure. But we're talking about the general plastic bags that when you go to a grocery store and you're checking out, those are, when you say restricted, does that mean you can't use them at all? Or does it mean that you can in some cases and not in others?
So if you have small bags that you're using to put your vegetables in.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about at the grocery store.
The ones with two handles,
yeah.
If they're coming from a prepared deli in a grocery store where there's prepared food, they can still be used in that case. If you're just putting cans and other food items in it, mm-hmm. they would not be used, right?
Okay, so those particular types of bags, those would be banned under this ordinance, the specific ones
they
when you check out. Okay.
They would be restricted, yes. So what we found in this preparation for this information is that in Gig Harbor, with a population of 10,000, we found that Home Depot, Safeway, Albertsons, and Fred Meyer, those four stores together order 9.9 million of those two-handle thin plastic bags every year. And that's just those stores. So we don't know how many Target uses mm-hmm. and Kohl's uses and other locations, but just those four stores alone. And that's a lot of plastic pollution.
Sure. So, the information you're referencing was found out by the Gig Harbor Sustainability Coalition, correct? That's not a government agency, but an activist group, an environmentalist group.
So it was actually found out by me because I was doing this particular ordinance I was doing, since I put it forward at the city, I was the one who called to the different locations and asked how many plastic bags they used. And I also asked how long it would take them to switch over from plastic to paper and promote reusable bags. And they needed about 2 weeks. So that is that tells you how many plastic bags they go through in a time. When this plastic bag reduction ordinance passes, it will be a six-month period before it would take effect.
So let's talk about the alternative then, and you just pointed out paper bags, but manufacturing paper bags is way worse for the environment than plastic bags. So if this is about sort of saving the environment, why push an alternative that's worse for the environment than the item that you wish to ban to begin with?
So paper bags are not worse for the environment. Paper bags do degrade in the landfill over time. Plastic bags never degrade in the landfill.
It uses four times, but creating them to manufacture the paper bag, it uses four times more water to manufacture. It generates three times more greenhouse gases. This according to a Scottish government study. And of course, as you know, there are plastic bags that are recyclable. In fact, the plastic bags right now, while I concede that people aren't recycling them the way they're supposed to be recycled, they're available to be recycled.
So they're not being recycled. And then again, when you look at the life of a bag, you can't just look at how much energy is used in producing it. You need to also look at whether it ever leaves being a pollution problem. And plastic bags never leave being a pollution problem. So it is the plastic bags that need to go away.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Councilmember Jenny Wook of Gig Harbor. We're talking about a ban on certain types of plastic bags at grocery stores. It also comes with a 5-cent fee that you would have businesses charge in order to use the paper bags. Is that correct?
Yes, it's a fee that is being that retailers and grocery stores would collect to help offset the cost of the paper bags. So in Gig Harbor, we are across the bridge from Tacoma, and a lot of cities, of course, are already using this. So we're just sort of falling in line and finally getting on board to help reduce some plastic pollution.
So if you look at the cost associated with plastic bags versus paper bags, it's huge, right? So 1,000 plastic bags will cost you about $38 plus shipping to get it over to your store, and then 1,000 paper bags will cost $230. Are the businesses you're talking with, they're okay with taking on that kind of increase in doing business, even though they would be getting 5 cents of that back?
So the Northwest Grocers Association will be coming to our city council meetings, and they are speaking in favor of this proposed ordinance. So they're very much in favor of doing their part to help rid of pollution, plastic pollution. And yes, they're fine with the 5 cents. And yeah, I don't really have a, we're going out and talking to businesses in our town, and there's not much pushback at all, no.
Yeah, and there are, by the way, two hearings coming up, or at least public comment in November, that if anyone's out in Gig Harbor who has an issue with this or is a supporter of this, you should absolutely go ahead and make sure you're attending these things to take on a position. You're also taking a position against plastic straws. So what kind of problem do you think the plastic straw issue presents to the environment?
So we know that plastic straws just end up in the landfill, and they end up in the beaches and on the beaches, and that's what our Harbor Wire Watch finds when they go cleaning the beaches. They find plastic straws, and we do know that they clog any recycling equipment because they're of such a size that they just clog up the equipment involved. So what we are proposing in this particular ordinance is that straight plastic straws would be restricted, and that
banned.
For those folks who have medical or issues or differently abled, flexible plastic straws would certainly be available on request. So yes.
But how big of an issue do you actually think the plastic straws is in relationship to some of the other plastic pollution, because we hear this completely incorrect and inflated number of 500 million straws used every single day or something. There was a study that was conducted. It wasn't actually a study. It was a survey that a 9-year-old kid did. And then somehow people have been pushing this as fact. How big of an issue do you think it actually is?
So there has, this was, he's now, that 9-year-old boy now is now 17, I believe.
Yes.
And there hasn't been a lot of pushback on those numbers, even from the Plastic Institute Association. So I don't know, really. It depends on the number that you read. And, but we know it's a pollution problem. And it's easily substitutable with other straws. So
to a degree,
what
right?
You find is in most cities who care about the environment and want to get rid of plastic pollution, they, as Gig Harbor, or as some of us in Gig Harbor, we're promoting easily substitutable alternatives for plastic. That's the point.
But
that's
I just,
how it works.
And I hear you. I just wish we wouldn't be using numbers that are just not verified and not part of any legitimate scientific experiment or study. We're just some 9-year-old. We wouldn't trust a 9-year-old with virtually anything. We shouldn't be dictating policy over that. But a number I do have in front of me, it's coming from two Australian scientists who say that if you were to look right now at the amount of plastic straws that you would be finding on coastlines, and just assume for a moment that every single one of them would end up getting into the ocean, we're talking about it accounting for 0.03% of the plastics that are estimated to be in the ocean. Isn't there something a little bit more meaningful that can be done to your point, which I value, and I think that there's legitimacy to it, wanting to cut down on waste? Couldn't it be better to promote education so people could properly dispose of and recycle these types of plastics in an effective way without sort of getting into this nanny state of, we will not allow you to use this because you're too dumb to use a straw properly or plastic bags properly?
So our ordinance on the plastic straw would take effect in 12 months after it passes. Most people, I think, a lot of people understand that getting rid of plastic pollution is a good thing, just as having regulations on helmets for kids riding bicycles and regulations on not drinking while you're driving the car. There are just some things that there need to be regulations for, and this plastic pollution is one of them.
Are you going to stop at this, or are you going to go one step further? I know part of this is also plastic utensils at some point, but what about plastic cups, plastic going beyond what you're currently doing? Where do you feel comfortable stopping, or when do you feel comfortable sort of pushing forward and going after some of the other ways?
So included in this particular ordinance that has straws in it is also styrofoam cups and plates and containers. That's also in that ordinance. Many cities have already limited styrofoam. They've done so 10, 20 years ago. So we're doing that as well. And also the cocktail picks and stirrers that are plastic. I think most people now understand that it's very easy for them to be wooden. There are other places I've been to, you know, conventions and things where they even use pasta to stir.
Yeah.
So that's where we're going, and we're interested in doing our little bit to curb plastic pollution. And we'll see after these two ordinances passes if anybody in our city would like to do more.
There you go.
It's up to the citizens, really.
It is up to the citizens, which means also if you're not a fan of this, you need to speak up, because it sounds like the council member here, Council Member Jenny Wook, is open to hearing from people who might disagree with her. And presumably, if there's a whole host of people who live in Gig Harbor who say that they're against this, then maybe this doesn't get passed. I've been talking with Council Member Jenny Wook this morning, the council member from the city of Gig Harbor. I really appreciate you stopping by. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You as well. You're listening to The Dory Monson Show on 97.3 FM, Cairo Radio. I'm Jason Rance, filling in for Dory. We're back after this. Welcome back to The Dory Monson Show. I am Jason Rance. Thank you so much for listening to me fill in today. You'll be back tomorrow. If you want to listen to me tomorrow, on weekday morning, 6 to 9 on AM 770 KTTH. 94.5 FM for those of you who are on the Greater East Side, downtown Bellevue, Kirkland, Mercer Island. Andrew's going to get mad at me, producer Andrew, because I'm about to calm everyone's like enthusiasm down just a little bit. Everyone's talking about, to an insufferable degree, Shake Shack opening here in the South Lake Union area of Seattle. And there was this a lot of disappointment when they had announced that, whoa, 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 I know we're supposed to open. We got to do a little quirks before we open up. We're going to postpone. And the good news for the people who I find insufferable, it's going to open tomorrow in South Lake Union. And now what we're going to have to experience over the course of the next several weeks is people pretending that this is the best burger that they've ever tasted in the history of burgers. Oh, my God, Shake Shack, you have never tasted a burger until you've tasted a Shake Shack burger. And they talk about it in the same way that they talk about In-N-Out, which they pretend is the best burger they've ever experienced. The same people who say In-N-Out's the best are the ones saying Shake Shack is the best. You can't both have the best. How about this? They're good burgers. That's it. They're very good burgers. I enjoy Shake Shack. I enjoy In-N-Out. It is not like God put together this burger for you to enjoy, and it's the most amazing thing that's going to transform your life into what you hope it becomes after eating a simple burger. It's a good burger. You know what? There are lots of really good burgers. Some of you make really good burgers at home. The fries, not so good. You should go to Shake Shack or In-N-Out or whatever, but let's all just relax just a little bit. Just a little bit. That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to say Shake Shack is bad because it's not. It's a good burger. Dick's, good burger. You need a burger, good burger. There are lots of really good burgers. So everyone, for the love of all things that are holy in this wonderful world, your excitement, to the degree that you share it over a burger, I personally find insufferable. Thank you. Is that okay?
That was wonderful.
I mean, I just gave them a plug. They're going to go open. You should go check it out, I guess, because I want businesses that are local to survive. I mean, it's not a local business, but it's a local business, right?
You're just building hype.
I'm just saying. Here's my big problem. There's some stuff out there that's really amazing that we should be talking about, but when you talk about it to a level that will never actually be met in reality, you're going to disappoint someone. So someone's going to go to Shake Shack expecting a 10, but what they'll have is like a 7 or an 8. Now, a 7 or an 8 is amazing, right? I would love to have a 7 or an 8 burger every single day. But when you expect a 10 and it's not a 10, you're going to be disappointed. So let's just go with this. I'll do the opposite. It's a 3. You should go check it out. Now I'm really just getting everyone excited. I'm Jason Rantz. Thank you for listening.
Go home! 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 Go home!
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.